Gary Knox Bennett, Shop Hero. Most woodworkers first run across Gary Knox Bennett when they read the legendary tale of his nail cabinet. A 6-foot-tall beauty in solid padauk, featuring box-jointed drawers, a curved glass door, custom hardware, oh, and a 16-penny nail hammered into the top cabinet door and bent over, complete with elephant tracks. In 1979, when he presented this work at the Cutting Edge New Works in Wood show at Contemporary Artisans Gallery in San Francisco, he was simply expressing a desire to knock the stuffing out of the atmosphere of purity surrounding art and woodworking at that time. By figuratively flipping the bird at the communal reverence being lavished upon neatly compartmentalized gallery works, Mr. Knox Bennett turned the art world on its ear. When his cabinet subsequently appeared on the back cover of Fine Woodworking, it was the conservative, fine woodworkers' turn to get their knickers very much in a twist. The magazine's subscribers reacted with outrage. "Who was this Philistine who did such a horrible thing to that cabinet?" This pleases me much. When I first read of his act of defiance, I too, like any fledgling woodworker, was feeling the oppression of the proper techniques to which I was being told to adhere. I'm all for learning the right way to do things, but part of the apprentice's satisfaction when achieving mastery is found in emphatically thumbing one's nose at one's teacher and then going one's own way. Here was a fine fellow, 37 years ago, beckoning me to just such a parade. Born in Alameda, California, in 1934, Gary grew up in a maritime household, the son of a sea captain. He bounced from job to job after high school somewhat without aim until deciding to enroll at the California College of the Arts in 1960. This was also the year he married Sylvia Mangum, whom he had known since high school, and with whom he is still attached at the hip today, the Lucky Sod. He studied sculpture and painting and produced a number of welded steel sculptures for his first series of works, which is unsurprising, since the stories of his youth are peopled by stevedores, coxswains, and lumberjacks. He and Sylvia moved to the Sacramento Valley to work and live on his ex-stepfather's rice farm, and Gary experienced his first substantial run-in with woodworking when he built an A-frame house in which they could dwell. Working for a meager $50 per month stipend, driving a tractor and running a rice dryer on 12-hour shifts, Gary and Sylvia found that comforts were few and far between during these years in the early 60s. Gary says they were subsisting on about $800 a year, his stipend being bolstered a bit by the occasional sales of his sculptures. According to a 2001 interview he gave to Abby Wasserman, a neighbor reportedly saved bacon grease for them so that Sylvia could make cornbread from the grease and cornmeal. And one year for Sylvia's birthday, Gary bought her 8 pounds of butter. "We lived in abject poverty," he said. Sylvia said, "You know something's wrong when the fashions in the Sears catalog start to look good." In years 3 and 4 of their 5-year stint in Lincoln, California, 30 miles north of Sacramento, some visiting friends brought an opportunity that would change the course of the couple's butterless existence. Patricia Oberhaus and Peter Newfield of Berkeley, California, basically invented the groovy head shop on the eve of the entire hippie movement. Their store, appropriately called The Store, sold original paintings, records, antiques, jewelry, and handmade clothing. They wanted Gary to make some jewelry for sale based on some gifts he had made for Sylvia. So he turned out a collection of huge dangly earrings with a lot of scroll work and curlicues made from brazing rod. His stuff sold like hotcakes, so he kept making more earrings and also segued into roach clips. A roach clip, for those of you not familiar, is traditionally a small alligator clip with some sort of decorative handle attached. The spring-loaded clip can be used to hold the last little end of a joint of marijuana when it has burned down to a smoke-blackened nub or roach. Gary was into the idea but disliked the aesthetics of the alligator clip, so he devised his own style of pincers with a metal sleeve that would slide down to pinch the joint tightly. An original artist from the get-go. Or was he? We'll get to that. His roach clips were a huge hit both in the Bay Area and Los Angeles, selling out as fast as he could hammer them out by hand. They moved back off the farm and made a go of it in the city, with Gary working on sculptures while continuing to crank out roach clips and earrings. Dissatisfied with the amount of money they were spending on plating these items, Gary and Sylvia set up their own plating company, called Squirkin' Works, Inc. Meanwhile, Knox Bennett continued to work as an artist, making metal pieces and clocks and light fixtures. He was introduced by a friend to Gump's Gallery in San Francisco, where he was given a show of his unique clocks, which led to further gallery shows and more evolution in Gary's vernacular, until he was experimenting more and more with furniture. Finally, he made the nail cabinet in 1979, and his growing notoriety suddenly took off like a shot. One of the most interesting aspects of discussing this book with Gary Knox Bennett is that he bristles when I refer to him as a woodworker. "I'm a furniture maker," he insists. "When I started showing back east, it was the Tay Frid stuff in walnut and maple and everything. And I've got shows with aluminum and glass and paint, and people said, 'What's with this guy?'" Despite his education and early career, Gary also doesn't agree with being called an artist. Over and over again, in interviews, he holds up his hands and insists that, no, he's a furniture maker. More than any woodworker I've spoken with, much more, this noble fellow certainly has an artist's point of view. Partly, this seems the result of having come to prominence alongside the great studio furniture artists of last century. You know the ones, Maloof, Wendell Castle, Nakashima, Krenov, Art Carpenter, Escherich. But Gary said something that stopped me in my tracks. These luminaries, with whom he was friendly or at least acquainted, his letter of admonishment to a prickly James Krenov is laced with hilarious justice, were trapped. He said, "Okay, you're Maloof and your rocker hits. And I loved Sam. We were very good friends. That rocker hits, and then you're stuck making that goddamn thing for the rest of your life. What kind of artistic journey is that?" What I had never paused to consider as I joined the hordes of acolytes, rightly worshiping at the altars of Maloof and Nakashima, was that popularity and success were wonderful, but they could also encase one's life in a rather gilded cage of sorts, stifling the artist's need to create original work with a public demand for the greatest hits. I will call this man an artist and a furniture maker and a woodworker, because he is all three, and he's also a sculptor and a welder and a humorist. He said, "I've chosen to work with color because I want to do something that really pushes me. I like to use green because it's so hard to work with. I like that challenge." Sounds like an artist to me. Of course, it's all semantics. My mechanic might be so amazing at tuning up the motor on my chainsaw that I call her an artist. All depends on your point of view. When I first arrived at the Oakland studio, in which Gary Knox Bennett has been making goodness since 1968, I giggled with delight. Walking down the sidewalk in an otherwise unremarkable working-class neighborhood underneath a freeway, I came to the shop door, a massive and august edifice, imposing at first, until you focus on the assorted touches of rusted whimsy, which kind of aptly describes the occupant as well. At 6'9", Mr. Knox Bennett has a physical presence that vacillates between ursine and mountainous. His expansive shop fits him well, what with a 36-inch Tanowitz bandsaw from 1927, a 30-inch Oliver joiner from the 50s, and a 24-inch Powermatic planer of similar vintage. The workshop seems as though it was outfitted by giants, suited more to the fabrication of ziggurats and foothills than the sometimes delightfully delicate jewelry and clocks that the former curator of the Oakland Museum, Suzanne Bazerman, referred to as pure play. Thankfully, his demeanor doesn't match his sequoia-like appearance, or I would never have had the nerve to ask him a question. Gary purports to be slowing down a bit in his later years. He's 82. But that claim doesn't seem to hold much water as I watch him assemble his most recent creation, a nearly finished desk for a friend's jewelry store. With his trademark collage of materials, plywood, color core, formica, aluminum, the piece was simultaneously classy and irreverent. It spoke to me as we sat and analyzed it together. Or I should say he analyzed it and I soaked in the tutelage. He said, "What is the one thing that's driving me crazy about this? Can you spot it?" I wanted so badly to spot the indiscretion and impress my mentor. "Is it?" "Yeah, you're looking in the right area." I had no idea. "It's that curved element. It should be tapered from top to bottom, not a consistent thickness. Damn it." Referring to a single leg element with an extreme curve that I learned he had steam bent in one piece without slicing it into laminations, certainly a badass way to go about it. Expecting me to pick out this leg as the one indiscretion on his work of art would be like asking me to tell him which horse in a herd of dozens had any talent. There is a quality to his furniture that leads me to opine that Gary would have made a splendid cartoonist. Not only do his designs evoke a sense of sharply drawn mirth, but he loves a one-liner as well. "Experience is what you get when you didn't get what you wanted. Isn't that great?" Can't remember whose that is. I looked it up. Randy Posh, The Last Lecture, 2007. Gary carries a little black calendar book in his vest pocket that has 1996 embossed upon it in faded gold. Brought to mind of his cash, he pulls it out of his pocket and flips into it. "A crushing certainty that eliminates doubt. That's Larry Wright on religion. Effing great, isn't it?" It's from the documentary Going Clear by Alex Gibney. Then Gary says, still flipping through his little black book, "Here's one I won't repeat about a barrel, a jar of Vaseline, and the Hell's Angels." One of his clocks from 1972 bears this inscription on the back. "A little rough, but who gives a shit? C+. To me, that is the sentiment of an artist who is in the batter's box taking swings. He won't hit it out of the park on every pitch, but his passion makes even his foul balls works of genius. In a recent David Savage video, Gary offered this advice to aspiring artists. "Don't use a computer. The computer cannot make art or craft. It can't do it." He goes on to say that a world run by technology is what Ruskin and William Morris feared, and that we may be on the verge of such a takeover even now. The interviewer asks him, "What is it you fear will lose?" Gary holds up two prodigious, calloused and crooked hands, crowned by 9.5 fingers, and says simply, "These." His 1979 nail cabinet was only the beginning of an immense furniture career for Gary Knox Bennett. His series of exploring and exploding the accepted forms of chairs and tables has continued to delight and anger the public audience for decades. His slab tables practically sit up on their meaty haunches and tell you a story, one that you've never heard before, but is strangely as comforting as it is novel. I highly encourage you to explore his work deeply and find within it a tacit permission to fly your own freak flag as high as you dare.